good evening.
Hi, Angie.
An unsurpassed, penetrating, and perfect Dharma is rarely met with even in 100,000 million kalpas. Having it to see and listen to remember and accept, I bow to taste the truth of the Tathagata's words. Well, good evening.
Good evening.
I think we need introductions.
Go ahead, do it again.
Oh, hi, I'm Kara. I'm new.
I'm glad to meet you. Welcome.
Angie, I'm Ingrid, and we've met several times in the past. Sam is friend.
I do remember. Yes, I'm so glad to see you.
Nice to see you.
Samia,
Britt,
Ellie,
Wendy,
Ron, Jeffrey.
Wonderful. I miss you all so much. The real adjustment. It's amazing. I'll be back next time. So, that's good to look forward to. We're on chapter 29. We only have four more chapters. So, after Sesshin, I think we'll have to start thinking about what to do else, if we haven't already begun. It's amazing that we've gone all the way through this. It's a tiny little sutra, and yet it's taken us months to get this far. So I think that's a very good thing. Not that we understand it, but that we've taken it in some way and made it a part of our own diamond mind, the mind that cuts through and can see, is willing to see. So the question all the way along has been, what is Buddha? And it starts out with a story of, a real simple story of Buddha just getting up and getting dressed and going to town and getting some groceries and having some lunch and going back home. Very simple, very beautiful little story. And then all the questions begin to come from Subhuti. Well, everything is already empty. What is the Buddha's body then? Obviously, he's eating and sitting and walking and is a human being. He is a body. And so Buddha begins to help him get a more balanced view of how things are, how things are, that what we see are things, what we experience is thing after thing after thing. If we're scientists, we get interested in analyzing and getting to know better a certain kind of thing and get to know and share that knowledge. But every one of us lives in a thingy world. And we think of ourselves as things as well. And so, of course, we think of Buddha as thing also. Subhuti was thinking of Buddha as some... I'm not quite sure what he thought, but some otherworldly kind of being. And then Buddha keeps showing him, well, that's in a sense that's very true, but in another sense it's not true at all. And then the question is, how can you take both those truths and live with them? How could Buddha be both? And if Buddha is both, how can everything be both? We always want to say it's one thing or another thing. And we always have to choose. But when we're talking about what's true, if we really begin to look at things, we have to see that things are just made out of other things. And those things are made out of other things. So there's no end to the thingification of everything. But in the end, it's all bits and pieces of the same thing. It's remarkable, isn't it? It's really cool. So although we may feel lonely sometimes, the truth is we're not ever separated from anything. We're right smack in the middle of the soup. And no way to get out of it. So Buddha is making clear to Subhuti that the thingification of everything is what he calls an apparition. It shows. His own body is his physical body is an apparition. It's an appearance. We're each of us an appearance. Our breakfast is an appearance. As we eat it, it disappears and transforms into something entirely different. And so if we are so devoted to the thingification of everything, becoming so attached to things that we see as appearances, and are distressed when they change, as they inevitably do, and disappear, as they inevitably do, then we're living in a very painful and dreamlike world, an unreal world, in which we believe that the things that we see are real, including our own self. Because if we study ourself truly, we have to see that we can't put our finger on anything. Whatever we see is on its way out and something new is coming in. Continually. It's very, very dynamic. So the you of yesterday is not the you of today. The you of 10 years ago is definitely not the you of today. Or 30 years ago. Or when you were a baby in a crib. It's not easy to wrap our minds around this. It's not easy to accept this. We'd rather be a thing. It makes us more important, for one thing. We can consider whether our thinness is more in some way superior to somebody else's thinness. That we have bluer eyes or curlier hair or a bigger house or something like that. If you really study this apparition, you begin to see that all of those things are meaningless. And if we don't get the picture now, we almost always get the picture on our deathbed, when we see we really didn't own anything. And that whatever we were and whatever we thought we had, it's gone. we can consider this carefully, we can really, we have a choice. We can panic and say, oh, what'll I do? It's nothing. But the point is that there's so much to do, that if we're willing to understand this, it makes us available to the rest. It makes us sympathetic to everything else. Everything is in the same position. We're all going to die. We're all on our way out. And as we're on the way out, of course, new things are coming into being all the time. And so it's a very rich, very nourishing kind of place to be that we find ourselves as human beings. And there's very much that we can do to help each other to see clearly how things are, so that we're not stuck in a deep kind of false suffering, imaginary suffering. So let's read this chapter. It's very short. It's just one paragraph. Somebody have it?
Furthermore, Subhuti, if anyone should claim that the Tathagata goes or comes, or stands or sits or lies on a bed, Subhuti, they do not understand the meaning of my words. And why not? Subhuti, those who are called Tathagatas do not go anywhere, nor do they come from anywhere. Thus they are called Tathagatas, Arhans, fully enlightened ones.
So Red Pine says, from the very beginning of this sutra, the focus has been on the Buddha's body. And this sutra can be read as a meditation on the Buddha's body. But which body? It has sometimes seemed like the Buddha has been playing the old shell game with Subhuti. Now you see me, now you don't. Under which shell is the real Buddha? As early as chapter 5, the Buddha asked Subhuti if he could see his body. And with this koan, he began Subhuti's education in the perfection of wisdom. Obviously, the Buddha was not referring to his physical body, which Subhuti knew was empty of any self-nature and merely an apparition. But to which body was the Buddha referring? And why did he refer to bodies at all? Subhuti was known for his attachment to emptiness. Hence the Buddha sought to lead him beyond emptiness by considering his reward body, which is the reflection of a Buddha's selflessness. The Buddha also urged Subhuti to cultivate his own reward body, his own selflessness, which he called his body of merit, by resolving to liberate all beings without attachment to any being or to any self. If we wish to follow in the Buddha's footsteps, we need to find the Buddha's real body, his uncreated, indestructible body, his diamond body. In this chapter, the Buddha finally lifts the shell. Chao Ming calls this chapter the utter stillness of perfect deportment. Thich Nhat Hanh calls it neither coming nor going. And Weenen calls it serenity of conduct. Tathagata means thus come, and it means Tathagata means thus gone. So when you say Tathagata, it means the same, it means both. I often remember when I get to the point about Tathagata of how Koban conducted a funeral very early in my practice, and he rapped on the coffin and said, Tathagata, we don't know where you come from. We don't know where you go. And then he shouted Tathagata and roared at the top of his voice. So if the Buddha doesn't come and doesn't go, if all dharmas are selfless and birthless, can anything be said to truly come or go? So as this sutra nears its end, the Buddha finally tells Subhuti he was mistaken if he thought anything took place at all in the garden. And he was also mistaken to think he could follow on the Buddha's footsteps when in fact there are no footsteps. Chifo said, it was said that the Tathagata cannot be seen by means of attributes, and yet he does not lack attributes. Attributes are basically the appearance of dharmas. This does not mean to get rid of appearances, but only to remain detached from dharmas. This means that when we see that dharmas have no self and can accept that dharmas have no self, prajna, wisdom, will appear. And one more quote. The Avatamsaka Sutra says, when water clears and the moon appears, the moon doesn't actually come. True. When clouds arrive and the moon disappears, the moon doesn't go anywhere. When the mind is pure and we see the Buddha doesn't actually come. When the mind is impure and we don't see him, the Buddha doesn't go anywhere. It's all due to the purity or impurity of our minds. The Buddha doesn't come or go at all. The body of 32 attributes is simply the Tathagata's apparition body. So in the encyclopedia, it translates Tathagata this way, which is a little bit different. He is both the perfected person who can take on any form and disposes of the 10 powers of the Buddha, and the cosmic principle, the essence of the universe, the unconditioned. The intermediary between the essential and phenomenal world. In the absolute sense, is wisdom and meditation. I don't think that's terribly helpful, actually. It's too abstract. There was one point in a lecture Suzuki Roshi was giving when he was trying to talk about this, and he ended up just pointing around and saying, Buddha, 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 to everything in the room. If we see clearly, we have to see how it all works together, is working together, continually, dynamically, is life itself. Without a person, perfected or no perfected, and not so much pure and impure, I think that's kind of something of a distortion also. It's not so much being pure as being clear. Nobody's pure. At least nobody I ever met, and I don't think human being operates that way. But clarity is possible. We have cloudy minds, we have days when we're clear, and our practice in meditation is about developing clarity, allowing clarity to be the place that we want to be, and bringing it everywhere, wherever we go, not just in the Zendo. So there's time for questions, comments.
Angie?
Mm-hmm.
It's a comment, but I just finished rereading Lolita in Tehran, and there's a part in the, it's a memoir of, you probably have all read it or know about it. As this woman is leaving Iran for, I guess, forever to move to the States, she says to one of her friends that what she's going to miss the most is miss who she is there now, because she'll never be that person again.
Yes.
It's more than missing the people around you or everything that you're leaving. And so I guess we're leaving that person every moment. Aren't we?
Yes, but if we leave our country, it's much more wrenching.
I'm sure.
We notice it then so much more.
Yeah.
Even leaving one part of the country to another part of the country is difficult. My mother came from Arkansas, and she said when she went home, they said she talked like a Yankee. And when she was in St. Louis, everybody said, oh, Virginia, you have such a pretty southern accent. So she thought she didn't belong anywhere anymore. And I think that happens quite a lot. And it can be difficult because we identify ourselves with where we are. We are where we are, right? That's a very interesting point, Ellie. Well, consider what we're going to do the next go round. We have some time to give it some real consideration, and we can go back to things that we've done before, if you like, or plow the fields. There's infinite amount of material now that we can explore. always remembering that Zazen is the basis for whatever it is that we open our minds to. That's why I set this up, so that there's at least as much Zazen as there is to talk about it. Because without the experience of sitting, it doesn't make any sense at all. It's just ideas. I had my trees trimmed today, and the man who did it started talking to me about Christianity and was very in love with the Bible and very in love with the whole message of Christianity, and was telling me he thought studying the Word was the most important thing. And I told him I was doing Zen, and he said, "Oh, that's a philosophy, isn't it?" And I said, "Well, no, it's really just sitting down and looking at a wall." He wouldn't believe it. He thought that was just inconceivable. But that's the essence. That's the main thing.
Angie?
Yes?
On that note, Joko Beck refers to it as Zazen as the bread and butter of our practice.
Bread
and butter.
I like that it has butter on it. That's really nice. I had Irish butter the other night. That was superb. Maybe that's what we have. Well, it's 8 o'clock. Are there announcements?
Yeah. We could announce that you're going to be at Jikoji starting Friday evening.
Yes.
The following Friday morning. Do you know when your talk will be? In case.
Tea at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And then the talk will come right after the tea.
Okay.
And except on Sunday, we'll use the regular Sunday schedule, and the talk will be around 11 o'clock in the morning.
Okay. That's very helpful. So we're all invited to come up there as we have time. And if you plan on eating a meal, I would let them know ahead of time.
Yeah.
We hope to see you then the following Tuesday night.
The following Tuesday night, I will be with you in the Quaker Center. So, and be very, very happy to do it too. I managed to the De Young Museum on Sunday without a wheelchair. I watched the whole thing, and it was so much fun. I felt so, you know, it was a graduation present, birthday present for Sophie, and graduation for me. So start looking up.
Yeah. That was the Masters of Venice?
Yes.
Yeah. One of the Masters of the Venetian era. Yeah. So I guess next Tuesday night we'll work out, maybe have a couple of volunteers to do Waste Seeking Mind talks. Who would like to share their story next week of how they came to the practice?
Always very interesting to hear those stories and to recall our own stories. How did we get to this place in our life? or how did our life bring us to this place, which is more likely the way it happens.
Just, you know, be sure you can start anywhere. Some people start when they were born. Some people start with some traumatic experience. But, it's just a time to share and get to know each other better.
Well, should we have our 1 minute sit? Thank you all.
Thank you.
Thank you.